This is going to be a very different narrative. This is a narrative in which a new generation of future Labour people will gain the experience of running the city on their way to doing more in terms of running borough councils and city hall in the decades to come. But it will be very much different in another way. When I became mayor, it was Labour was pouring resources into rebuilding our public services. Tony Travers, a fairly independent academic there at the LSC, calculates that we got £39 billion of investment into London out of that government. That's how we rebuilt the police, the buses, and it's still being spent on projects like Crossrail. We know we aren't going to get that, which is why our manifesto focuses very much on what are the small achievements that we can make that can help people get through these very difficult times. That's why we're cutting fares 7%. And when I'm told this is outrageous, and we saw the front page of Standard predicting the collapse of transport for London if we cut the fares by 7%, I'm told, don't you remember when I cut them by a third? No, it didn't collapse. Don't they remember when I cut them 3 years later by 25%? It didn't collapse. I'm embarrassed the cut is so small. It's the most we can manage with the finances available. And what's bizarre about this is Boris didn't have to increase the fare since January. We pointed out at the Labour Party conference, and I'm sure he was watching, that there was a huge build-up of a surplus in the fares account. We've got the highest fares in the world. Our fares are twice what we pay on the metro in Paris. They're twice the European average. And even after we cut them, they'll still be the highest fares in the world. But we pointed out there was this big surplus in the fares account. And Boris Johnson could say, well, he's absolutely right. We don't need the fare increase that they just pushed through in January. But they didn't do that. They had an emergency meeting at Transport for London and decided to take £183 million that built up in the fares account and use it to pay off debts early. So they could say, the money's not there anymore. But, that must be a bit dim. If you've got the highest fares in the world, the surplus builds up every day and every month. It looks like it's going to be nearly £400 million by the time of the election. And that's where we'll take the money to cut the fares. £269 million to cut the fares by 7%, and also the one-day bus ticket by 11%. But the reason Boris couldn't do this is because he's tied into a deal with George Osborne to increase the fares 2% above inflation for 20 years, effectively to increase the high fares in the world by another 50%. And Osborne wants this because he's got the rail companies on his back. And the mayor steps for the tube have to also be implemented in the rush hour on the overland trains coming into London. And so we won't just cut the tube fares and bus fares, the overland trains coming in tonight will also be cut. And for some reason the rail companies aren't happy about that. That's not a good sign. It's not a good sign when they tell us they privatise the roads, it's all going to be cheaper, you know. I remember they told us that and they privatised the railway. So the difference between Boris Johnson and Mayor Smith at the end of 4 years, the average London traveller will have had £1,000 more in their pocket. That's £1,000 they've spent in local shops and goods and services. It will recirculate the economy, just like when Miliband argues for cutting VAT, it's to rebuild our economic base. We're looking at other things. TfL is the biggest purchaser of energy, and they pay half what you pay as a domestic purchaser. And it occurred to us, why don't TfL buy more, set up their own energy firm, and sell it to domestic users cheaper. We think we could cut your energy bill. We found the money. Fortunately, the colleges in London, we found the money to reinstate the education maintenance allowance. That 30 quid a week going to the poorest students just struggling to hang on in education. Boris Johnson could have done that if he did the day job, the 24/7, the boring down on detail. He could have found a way to reinstate the MA, but he's just not interested in that sort of detailed work. Then there's childcare. We've given a commitment that, because getting back get into childcare, I mean, and then getting into work, you have to pay upfront registration costs, you have to pay in advance. We've decided we'll give a £700 grant to the very poorest Londoners, people earning about £6,000 to £7,000 a year, to pay for those upfront fees. For people earning more like £40,000, we'll give up to £1,000 loan, which we'll expect them to pay back. We're going to find 100 nurses across London and pay them to stay open slightly longer each day so it becomes more flexible. If we can demonstrate this gets people back into work, I can go to PM numbers and say, look, this is the way to get people back into work. Put money into good, affordable childcare that frees up parents to be able to get back into work, knowing that their child is getting the pre-education that they really need and will benefit for the rest of their life. Finally, there's the question of the NHS. Now, every time I meet a mayor of New York, I am envious. Whether it's Giuliani or Bloomberg, the mayor of New York runs the hospitals, the welfare system, the schools, virtually everything that the citizen of New York requires from the state comes from city hall. There's one clear point of accountability. And I would love it. At some point, the mayor became the health authority for London. But we are going to do everything we can to fight to expose what this government is doing to the NHS. I know the office will be very funny and Cameron can be very nice and sweet and emotional at times and all of that. But the truth is, what this government is doing is absolutely wicked. For my generation, born into that happy post-war government, we have never had to worry about health. We have known all our lives, whatever we needed would be there free when we needed it. And how dare we deny that to the generations to come? This is a promise. That we will reinstate the NHS that provided that free care at the point that you need it. Because what they're doing, they hate the NHS. They hate it because it's so successful. And compare where we are with our major similar nations. In America, they spend 16% of their GDP on a healthcare system inferior to ours, where about 20% of the people still don't have any cover, and the life expectancies will get less than here. We spend 8%. Even Germany and France, with a system as good as ours, spend another 2% of GDP more. By having a state provider, we have actually provided the most cost-effective healthcare on the face of this planet. And the attack on this is an attack on all of us. And I will use the position of mayor at every stage to fight what they are doing. Everywhere I've been in London with now, there's an A&E under threat, or a hospital closure being talked about. And every one of those campaigns has asked the Mayor of London to support their campaign, and every time he's refused to do so on the grounds it's not his responsibility. It's not his responsibility to cut the top rate of tax for the 1% of his campaign for that. It's not his responsibility to challenge what's happening in the European Union. He does an awful lot of that. Mind you, that's where you'll shore up the votes in the future Tory leadership contest, and that's what he's about. We'll challenge that at every stage, because in effect, what Cameron and Osborne are doing is they are carrying on where Thatcher left off. And if we can't stop her, we will end up as some ghastly little mini America. Now, I'm the only person in the Labour team that was depressed when I pulled ahead of Boris in the polls. Everyone was elated. I don't know. There's going to be a tide of filth coming. They went all through last year thinking, oh, Boris is going to walk in. And again, the horrible things you're reading in the paper, that you can see it, I think you're still very up on our website. When we were doing a launch with Ed Miliband last week, a group of Tories, led by Guido Fawkes, the blogger, really viciously attacked what we're doing. They knocked over a camerawoman who was there, they prevented the LBC interview, and then there's screaming foul abuse appeal. This wasn't a good-natured, have a recall, Ken, and we can ask some questions. This was a vicious attack. If Labour people had done it, they would have done front page for a second paper. By now, I think the politicians are calling for the Tory party because they fear defeat, and they know what the significance of that is. Because this is election. It's Londoners' chance to tell this government you're going in the wrong direction. And my election will demonstrate that. The one, the other very remarkable thing about this election, every poll since Boris and I were selected by our parties 18 months ago has shown the two of us getting 88 to 90% of vote between us. Now, you've got to go back to the 50s for a general election like that. And you have to admit, you haven't heard anyone say they're all the same on this election. You haven't heard anyone say there's no difference between them. There are lots of differences. If I'm elected mayor, there'll be no mad Boris Island airport. In which, the 170,000 jobs at Heathrow. I mean, there could be a small disruption to the West London economy if we switch to a different hub airport. But, I mean, I have real doubts. I'm not saying I'd want to take off on an airline which is going off in an area where about half the migratory birds of the world pass through. Remember when that plane crashed into the Hudson after it stuck a seagull in? That can happen. However big the plane, you know, a pretty barking mass. No, Boris Island airport. I won't waste any of my time campaigning for cutting the top rate of tax. And I promise you, I will have no other form of income. I will be a full-time mayor doing that job 24/7. I won't be distracted. I just have to, because I have no ambitions beyond this job. I don't wish to be the leader of the Tory party, so I can just do it. Not everyone will have read the Daily Telegraph this morning, but hey, Gilligan's got a new line now. He's lost interest in my tax affairs. He's now decided if I become mayor, I will enforce a mass conversion of Londoners to Islam. And, I mean, the BBC was running with it all morning. I mean, will you be happy wearing a burqa and all that sort of stuff? So let me tell you why I said when I was at the Mosque of Finsbury Park. Because that was a mosque that was demonised in the Tory press. Not for anything that was happening in the mosque, but one completely idiosyncratic and unrepresentative Muslim with a barmy lion who had his sermons in the street. When I was at the mosque, I said, for me, what I understand about Islam is what was said in the last sermon of the Prophet Muhammad. Knowing he was a few weeks from death, he spelled out in that final sermon what he thought the role of Islam should be. And that is in such a contrast to the demonisation we see in the Daily Mail and the Daily Telegraph. Now, I only read it. I'm ashamed to say I've never read a biography of Muhammad. And I never read his sermon until last year. And it is remarkable. It's as though it was written for today. He says in there, no Arab is superior to a non-Arab. No white man is superior to a black man. He then goes on to say, God created you in tribes and nations so that you would get to know one another. Not that you will oppress and fight and convert or terrorize, but that you'll get to know one another. When I read that, I thought, that can be the motto for this city. Because that's what happened when we were attacked. In July 2005, there's that amazing 48 hours. We won the Olympic Games, and then we saw 52 Londoners killed on the tube and the buses. And every Londoner stood together. In this, the most diverse city on earth, where every faith and people from every nation are gathered, no one Londoner turned on another and attacked them. And if you want to have to sky night, and there's nothing somber, and the warmth that greeted Iqbal Sukrani as he walked to the rostrum to follow the Christian and Jewish speakers that had been there. We weren't going to be divided, I've never been more proud to be the mayor of this city than I was in those 24 hours. But I was never more torn. When the news of that came in, I wanted to be in the city. I thought, why haven't we invented that Star Trek beam me up, Scottish? I'd be there now. And I flew back, and I went down the streets, and I went down the hospitals. And I was stunned last summer in the rioting as that violence erupted in the first place. When Mark Duggan's parents walked to Tottenham Police Station, there should have been the mayor or the commissioner of police there to receive them, to listen to their grievances and promise them that they would be dealt with seriously. The mayor and the commissioner should have been on the television immediately after to say, we are serious about this. But there was silence, and the violence then erupted. And the days passed, and Boris Johnson said he wouldn't come back until effectively he was forced to. I'll give you this one final difference between me and Boris Johnson. I'll be here in this city when it's going wrong, just as proud of it as I am